So, for Saul, David, and Solomon, Israel was a united kingdom. All the tribes were under their kingship. But it was after Solomon that things changed. Anybody remember who Solomon's son's name was? It starts with an O and ends with a Boam. Rehoboam. Yeah, he was in there for 17 years. And under him, Judah split away from the other 10 tribes. There's Judah and Benjamin. The other 10 tribes went with Jeroboam. He took over kingship there. And from that point on, the kingdoms were divided. Rehoboam reigned for 17 years. And then his son came along, Abiah. He reigned for 3 years. And then finally his son, Asa, came along. And he reigned a good long time. I want to give you a quick snapshot of what these kings were like. Solomon, green represents good, red represents evil. Close enough. For most of his reign, Solomon was good. And then for the tail end, he was evil. The women in his life. Like he had 1,000 total women in his life. Messed up. They brought his heart away from God, so he ended off very poorly. His son Rehoboam is represented here. Started off terrible. He had a moment of humility and submissive to God, so there's a green H. And then the rest of his time as a king was a train wreck. He was a mess. His son Abiah, who only reigned for three years, was like this. He started off with a great moment, and then for the remainder of his rule, he was not good at all. And then there's Asa. Now he's got a dad and a grandpa who have failed the eye test when it comes to being a good king. So you'd expect that Asa, having seen them and been under their influence, would follow the same thing, right? But he doesn't. Check this out. Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He took away the foreign altars and the high places, and he broke down the pillars and cut down the asherim, and he commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment. He also took out of all the cities in Judah the high places and incense altars. And the kingdom had rest under him. Goes on to say in 2 Chronicles 14, he built fortified cities in Judah because the land had rest. And he had no war in the first 10 years, for the Lord gave him peace. And he said to the entire nation of Judah, let's build these cities and surround them with walls and towers and gates and bars. The land is still ours because we have sought the Lord our God. We've sought him and he's given us peace on every side. So they built and they prospered. Like I said, Asa had every reason to follow in his dad and his grandpa's footsteps. Even Solomon at the end of his life got all mixed up in worshiping foreign gods. And that trickled down and stayed there until Asa's reign. That's only a space of 20 years. But 3 generations later, and Judah and Jerusalem are filled with idol worship. Asa comes in as a king, and he's got a choice. I can just do what my dad and my grandpa did, or I can change. I can do things different. And I think there was a basis for this for Asa. It wasn't just like he woke up one morning and went, I don't think I'm going to serve the Lord. Asa knew what the law said. And I want to share with you what the law said. And Asa knew this. Every king was supposed to write out a copy of the law and keep it with them. I suspect Asa may have done that. I don't think his dad and grandpa maybe did. But it seems that Asa was very aware of what was said, specifically in Deuteronomy, when Moses renewed the covenant with the Israelites just before they were headed into the promised land. Here's Moses' warning from God. Take care, says Moses, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you. And you go and make a carved image, the form of anything that the Lord your God has forbidden you to make. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire. He'll eat you up because he is a jealous God. He loves deeply. And when that love cheated on, he feels jealousy. When your father, when you father children and children's children, that's grandkids, and have grown old in the land, and you act corruptly by making a carved image in the form of anything, and by doing what is evil in the sight of the Lord your God, so as to provoke him to anger, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that you will soon utterly perish from the land that you're going over the Jordan to possess. You won't live long in it, but will be utterly destroyed. And the Lord's going to scatter you among peoples, and you'll be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. And there, you're going to serve those gods of wood and stone, the work of human hands. They don't see, they don't hear, they don't eat, they don't smell. But, says Moses, from there you will seek the Lord, and you will find him if you search after him with all your heart and with all your soul. When you're in tribulation, all these things come upon you in those later days, you will return to the Lord your God and obey his voice. For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not leave you or destroy you or forget the covenant with your fathers that he swore to them. Esau had access to this. Esau knew about this. And he had this decision to make. His grandpa's reign was a train wreck. Here's what the scriptures say about Rehoboam. He did evil because he didn't set his heart to seek the Lord. His dad, Abiah, walked in all the sins that his father, Rehoboam, did before him. And his heart was not wholly true. He started off okay, but didn't stay wholly true to the Lord his God as the heart of David, his ancestor. David's the gold standard for kings that sought the Lord and stayed true to the Lord, even though David messed up. He kept coming back. Abiah didn't do this. His heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God. But Esau, despite all that influence, saw the law and knew the promises in it, and he began to follow these promises. He began to do what he had seen in Scripture, trusting that what God had said was true and the promises would be there for him. So let's look back. Here's what he chose to do, and he had to do it first before Judah did it. He chose to seek the Lord his God. Put him first. Do what he says. Follow his way. Commune with him. All these things are inherent in the idea of seeking the Lord your God. He returned to the Lord his God. And he obeyed his voice. He got rid of all those things and called Judah to the kind of devotion and obedience that they should have had. He was trusting in these promises and these truths that he, if he searched for God with all his heart, with all his soul, he would what? He'd find God. Now, is God playing hide and seek here? Is God playing hard to find, like he just capriciously disappears? This is a relational finding, a relational seeking. Where you have offended and God's jealousy has been ignited and his anger is towards them. And so it needs to be sought with repentance and returning and obedience. God says, if you seek me that way, you'll find me. I'm not playing hard to get, I'm not hard to find. But this is what's needed. All your heart, all your soul. And this, a truth, the Lord your God is a merciful God. Isn't that great, brothers and sisters, that our God is a merciful God? If he wasn't, we'd be obliterated. God even said to Pharaoh, he said this to Pharaoh, by now I could have wiped you and your people out. That was after 7 plagues. That is a merciful God, giving chance after chance. He is a merciful God. If in your sin you'll turn to him, you'll obey him, you'll deal with the stuff in your life, he is a merciful God, you'll find him. Remember, he will not leave you or destroy you or forget his covenant. Those are the promises that Esau was relying on and the truth that he knew about his God. And so he went at it. He took away the foreign altars in the high places. He broke down the pillars and he cut down the Asherim. Well, these were all part of worshiping the false gods of nations around them that Solomon's wives had brought in. They were from so many nations, they brought in their idol worship with them, and Solomon got involved in all that. And that just persisted. Now, kind of everywhere you went, there was a foreign altar. There was a high place to worship a deity. There were these pillars, and there was Asherim, which represented the place you could worship a specific god. He took them away. He broke them down. He cut them down. And then all throughout Judah, there were high places with incense altars on them. Now, these were places where the Israelites would go to worship God, which seems like a good thing. But God had said there was one place and one place only where they should worship at his altar and burn their incense. And where was that? It was in Jerusalem. So even these high places where there were these incense altars, which was supposedly a good thing of doing this for God, was bad because it was not where God had commanded. And God wanted them out. And Asa said, we're getting them out of Judah. And got rid of them all. So seeking God for Asa was dealing with anything in his life that made God jealous. But then he gave some commands. You need to seek the Lord, all of you. Seek the Lord together with me, says Asa. He invites them as a king. What a wonderful thing for a king to say. And he says, we got to keep the law and the commandment. And this, apparently, because for the first 10 years, there was nothing that went on that was warlike or unpeaceful for Judah. So it's from day one, Asa was in there, rolled up his sleeves and got busy doing this and called Judah to seek God and to obey his commandments. And it says, the kingdom had rest under him. Rest. That's a beautiful thing. Rest. It's good for us when we experience true rest. And it was good for the nation of Judah to experience true rest as well. Like we read, the land had rest. The Lord gave him peace. You see that? What did seeking the Lord produce for Judah? Everyone in Judah, there was rest. Rest from war, rest from conflict, and there was peace in the land. Now you could focus on obeying the Lord, continuing to seek him. It's a reciprocal thing. As we seek God, he brings into our lives these two precious, precious qualities, peace and rest. And they had it for a decade. And they knew it was coming from God, because up till then, since Rehoboam, there'd always been war. Rehoboam, he was the cause of King Shishak from Egypt coming into Jerusalem. He was able to break in there and he robbed all of the treasuries in the temple and all the treasuries that the king had and took it. And Judah became a vassal state. And then Judah and Israel were constantly at war the whole time Rehoboam was alive, and it continued on with Abiah. Still war, still unrest. Now, we don't live with war, thank God. But could you imagine living in the Ukraine? Every day, the possibility exists. You could be blown away. Your life could end in war. There's no rest. There's no peace. Pray for the Ukraine. Pray for that war to end. But living under that constant threat, I can't imagine. I've never been in that. But now the land had rest, and they had it for a solid decade. And look, Asa knows this. It's God doing this. He says, the land is still ours. And he's talking about Deuteronomy. The warning in Deuteronomy was, if you don't seek me, if you start worshiping all these other gods and things and love them before me, I'll take your land away from you. And he's like, the land is still ours. God hasn't judged us that far yet. So let's dive in. We've sought the Lord our God. We've sought him. And what has he done? He's given us peace on every side. They recognize this is what God had done. And it goes on to say, so they built and they prospered. Do you think that God's nature here has changed since the Israelites? Not at all. We're under a different covenant, but we serve and worship and love the same God of the old covenant. The way he relates with us has changed, but he hasn't changed. He's incapable of change. He remains the same. I love that verse. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. He says to Israel, because I do not change, you don't perish. He's the same God. He desires you to seek him. And he promises, even under this new covenant, rest and peace. Where am I getting that from? Matthew 11. Come to me. This is Jesus speaking. All who labor and are heavy laden. Does that describe you today? Do you feel like you're carrying a heavy load? Do you feel like life is one hard thing after the other? Are you carrying burdens? Are you weary and worn out? Well, Jesus says, come to me. It's no different than God saying, seek me. Come to me, Jesus says. And what does he promise you? Rest. Take my yoke. He's looking for a trade-in here. Give him your yoke and take his. Learn from him. Because he says, I am so gentle and I'm so humble or lowly in my heart. And what will happen? You will find rest for your souls. This isn't an obscure, hard to figure out promise, is it? Do you want rest for your soul? Come to him. Come to him is another way of saying, seek him. Do you lack rest in your soul? If you look inside, do you find a place of sincere rest given to you by God and you know it? If you don't, chances are really, really good that there's a breakdown in your seeking of God, of coming to Jesus anymore. Because it's a sure promise which will never fail. Come to me, says Jesus. Exchange yokes. Take mine. Learn from me. And you know what the promise is? I will give you rest right in your soul. Peace. Jesus said, peace I leave with you. My peace, not mine, his peace I give you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled. Don't let them be afraid. Can you feel the passion of Jesus here? What do we struggle with so frequently? These very things. Troubled hearts and fearful hearts. What am I going to do? What's going to go on? I don't know what's going to happen. He says, no. I've got peace for you. I'm leaving it with you. It's found in the person of his Spirit. Jesus said a couple of chapters later in John, he says this, I've told you these things, and this is a protracted conversation he's referring to with his disciples after the Last Supper. I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. That's the same call. Seek God, come to me. Peace is in Jesus. You need to come to him. But that peace is certain. It's been given. It's already yours. He wants you to experience this peace. It's his promise to you. Peace is yours in him. Come to him. Seek him. And if you do that genuinely, heartfully, the two results are predictable. Your soul will find rest and you will experience peace in your soul. Does that mean that life, I'm going to quote someone this morning, is all smiles and rainbows from that point on? No. No. There will be seasons where the rest and peace you have in your soul will be reflected in your life. Absolutely. But not always. And I would say this, inevitably, what Jesus says next here will come true. What does he say? There's another promise. In this world, you will have trouble. Just to be clear, when you sin, there's trouble. When you know it's right to do and you don't do it, that sin, and when you sin that way, trouble's coming. There's all sorts of things that happen to us that are troublesome when we sin. That's not what this is talking about. Jesus isn't saying, when you sin, trouble will come your way. That's a no duh. You need to confess your sin. And that he's faithful and just to forgive you your sin. And then you can start seeking him. This kind of trouble that Jesus is talking about is trouble you didn't go looking for. It's trouble that comes and finds you. And it's promised. It's a certainty. You will, in this life, face trouble you didn't ask for, you didn't try to walk into, you didn't flirt with. It'll just show up. Can I get an amen? It's true. No different for Esau. So, let's go back to him. 10 years, no war, peace and rest. And look at the army. He takes a census of the army. He's got 300 armed men from Judah and 280,000 armed men from Benjamin. And they all carried shields and they drew bows. These were mighty men of valor. You get the picture? This was a kick-butt army. And they've been able to grow because no one was dying for 10 years. Now, this might not seem like much to you, given today's armies in the world, but this was a significant army. This is a big one. Almost 600,000, my math right? 600,000 soldiers. Seasoned. Courageous. Woohoo, Esau. Woohoo, Judah. What happens next is the very thing Jesus said that's anachronistic. But that truth was still applied back in the Old Testament. 10 years of peace and rest because they sought the Lord. And they were still seeking the Lord. And what happens? Woo! Zerah the Ethiopian comes out against Judah with an army of 1 million men and 300 chariots. How many chariots did Judah have? Bupkis. And they came all the way to Marishah. Are you kidding me? After all these years of seeking you and cleaning house, worshiping you, this is what you do to me. You bring me an army twice the size, and they got 300 chariots. Oh, that was a wasted decade. We're just going to die. Is that what you would have said? Like, honestly, I would have flirted with that. Like, are you kidding me? It has to be an army twice my size and chariots. They got tanks. Like, that would have been so disheartening. And you're thinking back, okay, help me out, God. For the last 10 years, what exactly did I do? How did I screw up? And you can't figure it out. You don't know what's going on. See, that's the response when we face serious trouble. That's the response of believers who haven't been seeking God. They haven't been coming to Jesus. So as a result, they don't know what his rest, when he gives it to you, and his peace, when he fills you with it, is like. And so, yeah, when bona fide trouble that you didn't ask for shows up in your life, that's what we do. Since Old Testament times, people have been able to fake like they're seeking God. Did you know that? The Israelites were pretty good fakers. They could pretend with the best of them that they were seeking God. And it looked so good when they had their gatherings. I'll read this to you from Isaiah. This is centuries into Israel's existence. God tells Isaiah to shout this out and don't hold it back. So he's supposed to shout this. I won't shout it at you. Cry out, don't hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. That's get loud. Declare to my people their transgression, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily, and they appear to delight to know my ways. As if they were a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the judgment of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Doesn't this sound like a special kind of people? They seek him daily. They delight to know his ways. They delight to draw near to God. They ask him for righteous judgments. This is what they did when they were together. But this is what's going on behind the scenes. They say to God, why have we fasted and why aren't you seeing it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you don't seem to care? Look, this is God speaking. In the day of your fast, you seek your own pleasure and you oppress all your workers. You're fasting, but only so that you can quarrel and fight and hit people. Fasting like yours this day will not make your verse be heard on high. Do you get that? Fast forward to today. If you come here on a Sunday and you act like, and I'm saying that specifically, act like this is a great place to be. This is a great thing to be doing. I enjoyed the worship and song. I enjoyed the message, hopefully. And then you go away and you live life for your own pleasure. And there's fighting and there's quarreling. There's strife with people in your life. Brothers and sisters, you're not seeking God genuinely. You're just showing up for services. That's a truth. Isaiah summed it up this way on behalf of God. These people draw near with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but their hearts are so far from me. NLT has an interesting paraphrase of this. These people make a big show of saying the right thing, but their hearts aren't in it. When believers come on Sunday and put on the show, and then they go home, they go back to work, they go back to school, they go back to wherever, and they live like hell, so to speak. They're showing there's no seeking of God. There's no delight in him. There's no joy in him. It's a falsity. They were as capable of it in Israel's day as we are today. I need to take that to heart. That wasn't Esau. That wasn't him. God bless this guy. What an encouragement. So, first of all, he does the military thing. He gets his army together, and he draws up lines of battle in the valley of Zarephath at Maresha. Now, you all know where that is, right? So I gave you a map, just so you know. You can see way up in the top, Jerusalem. I got Jerusalem in the right area? No, Jerusalem. It's opposite my hand. And you can see the road to Egypt at the bottom there. Egypt, there's a road there. So the direction of Egypt is where the Ethiopian army came from. Esau and the army, they're up in Jerusalem, so they're up in the mountains. And the war's going to take place in a valley. So they end up here. And this is where the battle is going to take place, right in this valley, right in this plain. Beautiful place for a fight. So militarily, Esau's doing the right thing. Now what should he do? Figure something crafty out, right? Get a guard to go around behind, attack him on two fronts. Maybe he should pay another army. Maybe Israel's army, maybe another army to come along and fight with him. What do you think? Good idea? Militarily, that's the right idea. What does Esau do? He stands there and he prays. If you give a rating of 1 to 10 for military strategy, where is that on that scale? That's a zero. That's like, yeah, you better pray. There's a million people coming at you. But actually, he chose the very best thing. And because he'd been seeking God for a decade, he didn't stop now. Here's what he prays. He cries out to the Lord his God, Lord, there is none like you to help between the mighty and the weak. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rely on you, and in your name we've come against this multitude. Lord, you are our God. Don't let man prevail against you. Esau saw the battle as the Lord's. He saw the trouble as the Lord's. And because he'd been seeking God and experienced rest given by him and peace given by him, he wasn't about to step outside of that. I'm not calling for another army. I'm not trying to do brilliant strategy. You're our God. We're yours. We're going to continue to seek us. What should we do? Have you ever done that in the face of trouble that's come into your life through no fault of your own? I'm growing in this, but there was a long time in my life where no trouble, I approached it like the wheels were coming off and God, you've done me such wrong. I hadn't really learned much about seeking God, about his rest and his peace. Sometimes people will say, I've done everything I can. There's nothing left for me to do but to pray. Now, I'm taking for granted they probably prayed, but it's like, oh, the last thing we should do, the last hope I have is just, I'm just going to pray about it. That's not true. If you didn't start out praying about it, you've got the cart before the horse. The best thing you can do is pray. People tell me I'm praying for your son Matthew, and I tell them thank you because that's the best thing you could do for me. You could get together with Matt, you could try to get him into therapy, you could try to help him, but if you're praying, you're doing a monumentally greater work for Matthew on behalf of us than anything else you could do. That's the truth of it. Because together, you and I would be looking to our God like I am and I trust you are and saying, God, you're our God. You do something in Matt's life. And I'm trusting he's going to. I haven't seen it yet. But I am no end of hopeful for my son Matthew. Why? Not because I'm a fool. Because I'm just positive in nature. I've seen my God. I've saw him. And I know what he does. And I'm not dropping the ball now. He's got me. I'm carrying on. I'm anticipating by faith in my prayers. I agonize in prayer over Matt. But when I'm done my agony in prayer, I say to my God, thank you in advance for what you're going to do. And I anticipate it by faith. And I come out of my prayer chair stoked and ready. Prayer is the genesis of this. We express the rest and peace that we've experienced by seeking God in the face of trouble. And God deals with the trouble. I can't tell you exactly when, and I can't tell you exactly how, but I can tell you this, he will. There's some scriptures that come to mind. In returning and rest, you shall be saved. In quietness and in trust will be your strength. When you face trouble, you're as prone as I am to dive in and try to solve it. To make things happen for God. This is the key. Come back to him. Rest in him. He'll save you. Be quieted in your soul by Jesus. Trust in him. And you will experience his strength. It's there waiting for you. Not in busyness, not in tackling the problem, not in telling everybody, I got this. But in expressing that continued desire to seek him with everything, trust him with all, and watch to see what he will do. This is Jesus' promise. Come to me, and I will give you rest, right? John 15, how much can you do without him? Nothing. Do you believe that? Well, you could say, yes, I believe that, Pastor Dave. But do you live that out? Is this seen in your life? Do people around you, when trouble comes your way, do they see this dependence on Jesus? In your living, do you experience God-given rest of soul and peace in your life? That's preparatory to this. You don't go from 0 to 60 with this. You won't hit trouble this way if you haven't been seeking God and already experiencing his rest and peace. Esau cries out to God. He has that quiet and that confident trust in him. And God saves. And God does it. He takes a 1,000,000-man army and 300 chariots. And this is what happens to them. The Lord defeated the Ethiopians in front of Esau and before Judah. And the Ethiopians couldn't help themselves. They ran away. That's what was in their heart. We're twice their size. We're going to kill him. What's that king doing? He's praying. All of a sudden, I got to run. God's capable of doing that. He's capable of dealing with your enemies in ways you can't get to the mat and do things in them. They run away, and so he's telling the army, he's like, well, let's chase after them. This is what we do, right? Follow God. And they chased him down, and not one of that army was left alive. Listen to this. They were broken before the Lord and his army. And the men of Judah carried away much spoil. It was a good day because they continued to seek him, and they knew his rest, and they knew his peace. And that's no different for you and I today, brothers and sisters. The same God, different covenant, but the same thing is waiting. God created you for the purpose of seeking him. This is the main purpose. Now, he's got a goal behind that, but this is the main purpose he created you. I'm going against some deep theological teaching, because often you'll hear that God created you for his glory. I agree with that, but I look at it a bit differently. When I say for his glory, I mean for you to enter into and experience his glory. But there's teaching out there that says that God created you so that you would bring him glory. I'll go into another message at some point about that, but I disagree, and I think Acts 17 says it very clearly. The primary purpose, not that we don't glorify God or we can't glorify God by being created by him, but the primary purpose is stated in Acts 17. He says, he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way towards him and find him. It is actually not far from each of us, for in him we live and move and have our being. God created this world and you on it so that you would seek him. And he's close by. And this is said to every single human being. Not just to some chosen. This is to everyone. Paul spoke this at the Areopagus, and he spoke it to everyone there was an unbeliever. There's hope. He wants you to seek him. Mara's going to go away for a week. And when she comes back, I'm just going to be seeking my wife. I just want to spend time with her. I'm going to miss her. I can't wait till she gets back. I have the most fun in my life doing stuff with my wife. I love being with Sarah. She's gone. It's going to be difficult. First few days will be fine, but I know I'll miss. And then when she comes back, I'm going to want to just hang out, spend time. I'm not going to be asking her to clean something and do something. I'm just going to want to be with her, talk with her, hang out again. That's no different here. God wants you to spend time with him to get to know him. And then once you know him and have received him through Christ, keep seeking. The job isn't done. There's more to discover. And one day when we're in God's glory, which is the ultimate purpose, the ultimate goal for his purpose for us, we're going to be experiencing and glorying in and enjoying every facet of his goodness on full display, being experienced by us every second of eternity. We're going to be seeking that. We're going to want that then. And we can want that now. Some scriptures come to mind. When you said, seek my face, here's what my heart said to you. Your face, Lord, I'm going to seek. This is David, already the man of God, saying, God's continuing to say to him, seek my face. The NLT has a paraphrase of this, which I kind of like. My heart has heard you say, come and talk with me. And my heart responds, I'm coming. Your God desires time where you talk with him. I tried it this week because I'm kind of prone to asking God for stuff. I get in there, it's God, I need you to do this, I need you to do this, pray for this. I was like, slow down, Dave, slow down, slow down. God, you know what I appreciate about you? God, you know you did this week? I'm so grateful. Slowing down and talking with God, you'll never guess what God ministered to my heart. Two things. Sweet rest and a deep soul peace. I got some trouble in life. I got some difficulties. In the middle of all of that, rest and peace. It only comes through seeking him. coming to Jesus, not for what you can get, but rather so that you can know. The admonition from David in 1 Chronicles was, seek the Lord in his strength. Seek his presence continually. But then there's this. Who shall ascend to the hill of the Lord? And who shall stand in his holy place? Well, the person who has clean hands and a pure heart. Who doesn't lift up their soul to what is false and doesn't swear deceitfully. That person will receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. That's the generation of those who seek him, who seek the face of the God of Jacob. Selah. Stop and think. You see, before you can seek and find, what do you need to have? Clean hands spiritually and a pure heart spiritually. The first part of Asa's seeking the Lord was to clean house. What did he get rid of? Anything that they were prone to worship and love and serve ahead of God. That'll always stand in your way. What do you love? What do you serve? What do you worship? And if it's not God with all your heart and all your soul, seeking him is an almost impossible task. It'll almost stall out before it gets started. You need to pray, search me, O God. Show me, do I have a high place where I'm offering incense? Like doing the right thing for the wrong reason? Or am I outright, I got something that I worship and that I serve. That when I've got time, no one's watching, this is what I commit to. This is what I do. This is what I love. I got plans. This is what I'm headed for. And is Jesus leading the way in those? See, when that stuff is in our lives, it's very hard. Very difficult. It feels kind of fruitless to seek him. But when we do business with God, and do you need to do business with God? And by his grace and his mercy, we clear out those things that have our hearts, that are causing God jealousy, that are separating us from finding him. Clear those things out, he will be found. And the beautiful thing is, rest and peace and more are there waiting for you. You can't seek and find him unless you seek him with what? You will seek me and find me, says Jeremiah on behalf of God, when you search for me with all of your heart. Brothers and sisters, there's only one thing keeping you from seeking God and finding him, the joy and delight of your life, the one who gives you sweet rest of soul and peace, and that is you're searching for him with less than all your heart and all your soul. It's not worth it. It's killing you spiritually. It's keeping you from God. It's the source of why Christians will say, well, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I've never really experienced God. The certainty here is that there's something between you and him. Something you love and are serving and are worshiping more than him. And he's hurt. He's grieved by it. He's quenched by it. Deal with that by confession and by forsaking whatever it is. Let it go. And what awaits for you is the experience of God for which you were created. All the peace and the rest and the hope and the love and the joy is there waiting for you as you seek the face of God. But your heart can't do it half-heartedly. You won't find him. Let me pray. Father God, I just sense you've been speaking to hearts today. If we have your spirit inside of us, then we really do want to seek your face. And what we've heard from your word this morning is drawing to us. It's convicting us. It's something that we want because your spirit is at work. Father God, I pray for all my brothers and sisters here that they would respond by your grace to your great mercy extended to them, because nobody here has to be excluded from seeking your face and finding you. My prayer, Father, is that each one would do business with you, God. Do they have an idol? Do they have a high place reserved for something else that they love and serve? God, I pray that your conviction would come down heavy on them. That they would have no rest or peace until that's done away with and gotten rid of. That they would follow King Asa's example. And Father, I thank you in advance for the rest and the peace of soul that they're going to experience. Thank you for Asa's example, Father. Thank you for his encouragement to us. May we take it to heart. Follow his example. In Jesus' precious name, amen. Grace and peace, brothers and sisters.